This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 152B, page 644, and we've been talking about planetary spirits and spirits of planets. Really, this great paragraph about the planetary spirit being a logos and a planetary and a spirit of a planet being an entity, which subsumes within itself all the elemental lives of a planet. The seven sacred planets are composed of matter of the fourth ether. Okay, and the planetary logoi, the seven heavenly men whose bodies and planets are functioning normally, whose bodies the planets are functioning normally on the fourth plane of the system, the Buddhic plane. Well, basically, he's telling us here that the etheric body is the real physical body. The seven sacred planets are composed of matter of the fourth ether. The planets themselves appear to be physical. So we're not talking about other globes. What we term the name, by the name planet, is physical. But ether is the true physicality in our solar system, because the dense matter that a sort of congestion, as it is called, pertains to an earlier and apparently denser solar system. So the seven sacred planets are composed of matter of the fourth ether, and the planetary logo are the seven heavenly men whose bodies the planets are function normally on the fourth plane of the system, the Buddhic plane. Well, we would go here to a map, and we would see that, well, maybe I wonder if we go to a still bigger map, if we'll get a better idea. These seven sacred planets, we assume that that's what they are functioning normally on the intuitional or Buddhic plane, and maybe on different levels of that plane. But, I mean, in other words, subdividing the plane for the functions of various various types of chakras, subdividing the planes is important because there are strata of elevation on each one of these planes. And just as there are certain monads that focus on the third subplane of the monadic plane or the second subplane, that focus has to do with their vibratory status and also with their ray. Now, going back, and this is something I pointed out and something which maybe cannot be solved but should be at least remembered, notice that on the ethers, on both the etheric physical plane and on the astral plane, for the astral plane has ethers too, every plane does, the four higher planes, the four above the three, notice that the chakras, are the higher chakras are found in different ethers. The throat in the third, the heart in the second, the head in the first, and I suppose the Ajna Center also on a lower subplane of the first subplane would be my guess, maybe the fourth subplane possibly. But here, they function normally on the fourth plane of the system, the Buddhic plane. But do they not also have chakras? And I'll put it this way. Do it this way. But, oh, it's not working for me. But do they not also have chakras functioning on the still higher cosmic ethers? That's the question. I hope you understand what I mean. I hope I understand what I mean. and I'm going to... It's hard to keep the brackets in red. They keep on wanting to slip out somehow. When we look at this, suppose that Suppose that this were the Buddhic plane, and the planetary logos would be functioning largely in the ethers of the Buddhic plane. Well, no, maybe we can go up higher and do it this way. This is the Buddhic plane, and the planetary logos functions normally here. Will his This is interesting. I just thought of this. Will certain higher chakras, will they be found functioning only on the Buddhic plane, or will see, this is the correspondence here to the lowest of the ethers. So this intuitional plane is the correspondence simply to this here, this fourth subplane. So we notice that only lower centers are found on the fourth subplane. Now the entire next plane, which is the atmic, is the correspondence to the third ether. And we notice that one of the chakras does function on the third ether, doesn't it? And so it goes. Here is the monadic plane is a correspondence to the second ether, and the logoic plane to the first ether, and there are chakras apparently functioning, chakras of greater entities, that is, solar and planetary logoi, on these cosmic ethers, which are simply a higher correspondence of the lower four ethers that we have right down here. But I think I also see that we need What we will have to go to another plane in order to get the astral chakras. The astral chakras will function on the etheric levels of the cosmic astral plane. Now, this is not at all delineated or articulated, but you can imagine a similar structure here. And we're going to be dealing with four higher cosmic astral subplanes, and the astral chakras will function there. It's an exact correspondence. The law of analogy is helping us understand this. So that's why when I run into a sentence like, planets function normally on the fourth plane of the Buddhic plane, I think, yes, they do. They have some sort of etheric body there, but the etheric body exists on more levels than the fourth plane of the system. That's what I'm saying. And of course, one will have to wait for, one can have the correspondences, but one has to really discuss this with the master or some high initiate who actually knows. Right now, we have speculation, and that's what we can do, is try to offer intelligent and reasoned speculation. The correspondence is really pretty clear that one of our little systemic subplanes is as one of our entire systemic planes considered from a cosmic perspective. Our systemic fourth ether is the same as the fourth cosmic ether, which is in the entire Buddhic plane. And if chakras function on other ethers than the fourth, when they do so systemically, then they're going to do that cosmically as well. And so that's what leads me to the idea that the heart center of our, let's say, solar logos for the time being, is going to function on that ether which cosmically corresponds to the second ether systemic, which is where the heart center functions. So if we're going to look for a heart of a solar logos, let us say, we're going to look at the monadic plane, because that monadic plane is an ether where the heart chakra would focus. There is a problem, of course, where do we really begin? Are these the cosmic ethers for all, both the solar logos and the planetary logos, or in some sense, does the cosmic ether for the planetary logos begin here and work its way down and somehow include the higher ethers, the ethers of the mental plane where the causal body is found? But that would get me off into cosmic fire, and the reason I ask that question is because of the quaternary called vibration, light, sound, and color, and the way that is placed on the different planes. Well, I don't think I better go there. It's very tempting. You can always feel when I'm undergoing a temptation to ramify off into a subject which is large and which has a tangential relationship to what we're talking about, but which would involve quite a bit of time. Well, as you see, I could not resist temptation. I found this tabulation which I made, and it tells us where these four really vibratory factors are found. Electrical vibration is found on the logoic plane for the solar logos. Electric light on the monadic plane, electric sound on the atmic plane, and electrical color on the buddhic plane. But notice it moves downward. For a heavenly man, and this has to be significant, electrical vibration, which is in a way the originating vibration from which light, sound, and color arise, occurs on the monadic plane. Electric light on the atma, electric sound on the buddhi, and electric color on the mental plane. And is it the entire mental plane, or just the higher levels of that mental plane? I threw a chain lord in here because I thought there had been a jump. We needed a being for whom electrical vibration occurred on the atmic plane. Because for man, we're told that electric vibration occurs on the buddhic plane, electric light on the mental plane, electric sound on the astral plane, and electric color on the physical plane. So we have here a quaternary that seems, from the solar logoic perspective, to be related to the four cosmic ethers, vibration, light, sound, color, and always to four higher subplanes, I would say. But the subplanes seem to change for a heavenly man, and they certainly change for a man. So the vibratory source, which is responsible for so much that goes on in terms of the light of the mental plane, the sound of the astral, and the color of the physical, originates on the buddhic plane for man. Here we do not have an exact correspondence to the four higher ethers, but I'm just wondering if the four higher ethers are always in the same position for every type of entity, depending on the scope of the entity. So there is a kind of a correspondence here. If we have a solar logos that has electric vibration on the logoic plane, and electric light on the monadic and so forth, then when we look at the human being, we would say, from the etheric perspective, there's a way to say that electric vibration has a lower correspondence on the first subplane of the etheric physical systemic plane, that electric light on the second ether subplane, subatomic, electric sound on the third, and electric color on the fourth. And I'm reminded of those waves and bands of color that DK tells us can sometimes be seen by the individual who is falling asleep, and first he would encounter the first ether in the process of falling asleep, and then perhaps would encounter sounds, and then would encounter great areas of light, and then perhaps, who knows, how vibration would manifest itself on the first subplane. Anyway, these are analogies which will have to be taken into consideration, because they suggest that the four vibratory factors have different points of origin for different types of entity, depending on the status of the entity. And yet, it must be said that on the first subplane of the first subplane of our systemic planes, which is the logoic plane, Sanat Kumara, the three Buddhas of activity, and even high Chohans such as the Christ and others have their focus. Does this mean that in some sense they have become solar beings? Because there's an overlap here. But they are definitely beyond the electrical vibratory domain of a heavenly man. They've entered into a plane which is only found as part of the solar logos, into the vibratory level of the solar logos. So when we hear that Sanat Kumara is a direct disciple of the solar logos, maybe that has something to do with the plane whereon he is primarily focusing, related to Leo, which rules the sun. You know, the divine flames are found there. So the Sea of Fire is really, in a sense, more a solar plane or a solar influence plane than it is a planetary plane, although it is really, as initiations are, initiations overlap too, so the third initiation is the third planetary and first solar. There's an overlap, so the logoic plane has to be still considered to be part of the planetary system, but the solar factor is then influencing there. I suppose there's a place where the solar factor does not entirely influence, and we might consider that to be any plane lower than the Buddhi, and yet the heart of the sun, I think, has an influence on the higher mental plane. So, as I say, it's very intricate, and what we are really studying here is the overlapping domains of influence of greater and lesser beings. There are some areas where both a lesser and a greater being are focused. Both of them are focused. But there are some areas where the lesser being is no longer focused and the greater being is. And we're trying to study those overlaps of beings within beings. Although I thought there must be a place where electrical vibration occurs in relation to the atmic plane, and thought that a chain lord would be the most convincing entity to place there as one of the major chakras of a heavenly man, we do have another problem, because there are also globe lords who are part of a septenate that descends from a chain lord, and there seems to be no place for them as man is given electrical vibration on the Buddhic plane, unless, of course, some share a different level of that plane, a different level of, let us say, the atmic plane for a chain lord, with a chain lord being higher in its focus upon the atmic plane and a globe lord being lower. But, as I say, there's no way we can solve this. We're just looking at the indicative pattern. All right, so we'll let that one go, and we'll look over here. Certain of the planets are to the logos what the permanent atoms are to man. They embody principles. Certain planets afford only temporary homes to these principles, and this is one of the distinction between a sacred and a non-sacred planet. And basically what he's saying here is the non-sacred planets afford only temporary homes for the principles of a Sola Logos. So we could, you know, we could, I've done this in the Cosmic Fire commentaries, so a lot of this is repetition in terms of that written document. But we are sometimes told that Saturn is a correspondence to the physical permanent atom of the solar logos, and that Neptune and Uranus also have their associations, not a direct correspondence, with the astral and with the astral permanent atom, and perhaps with the mental permanent atom. This is found in a treatise on cosmic fire, on, I believe on page 406. And here we have it, I think. This is obviously for advanced students in another century. Uranus and Neptune are reflections of the logoic, astral, and mental permanent atoms, but not in that order. I think Neptune for the astral and Uranus for the mental. Saturn is in fact the correspondence to the logoic physical permanent atom. This is an occult mystery and must not be separated from its allied truth in the cosmic scheme. And I've gone into this. I don't think I will now. It's a very intricate consideration, not to say that I've fathomed it fully. But what really is a cosmic scheme? A planetary scheme has a planetary logo supervising it and uses chain lords as chakras. A solar scheme, I suppose, would have a solar logo supervising it and would have planetary schemes as its chakras. A cosmic scheme might be that of a cosmic logos and would have solar logoi and their systems as its chains. So in a way, we are here in the, or would it be solar logoi would be the globes. We are in a kind of a solar chain. Our planetary schemes are as chains to our solar logos, and the entire solar system is as a chain to a cosmic logos. And maybe we have to investigate what he has said here by considering some of those greater structures and not just our planetary scheme and its chains. Yeah, I think definitely we have to get into a cosmic structure to deal with this. Neptune, Uranus, and Saturn will therefore have absorbed the essence of manifestation in connection with the solar logos. Yes. And in connection with the solar logos, they correspond to the three permanent atoms in the causal body of man. Well, Saturn... There's something else here, because Uranus and Neptune are reflections. They are reflections perhaps on a physical level of an astral permanent atom and a mental permanent atom, respectively on the cosmic astral and cosmic mental planes. But in a way, there has to be a cosmic astral part of Neptune and a cosmic mental part of Uranus as well. So, you know, any one of these could provide a thesis for a student in a new school. And I don't want to dishonor the subject by saying too much about it, because I haven't got the penetration, really, to figure this out the way it should be. We also have other sacred planets. You see, there are higher permanent atoms in the triadal nature of a solar logos. And these permanent atoms will be found on planes superior to the cosmic causal. So we might also have to look for other sacred planets which correspond in some way to the lower permanent atoms. See, I'm a little bit surprised to see the three synthesizing planets correspond to what are the lower permanent atoms, and we're leaving out the Buddhic permanent atom and the Logoic permanent atom, and maybe we don't really have a mental unit here. But there are ways of assigning the lesser of the sacred planets perhaps to the lower permanent atoms. And I think I don't know what else would take the place of those higher permanent atoms in the case of the Logos. But they would be found on cosmic Buddhic and cosmic atmic levels. And as a result, we would really know nothing about them. So anyway, we'll just have to let that pass. A few things have been mentioned. It says certain of the planets. Certain planets afford only temporary homes to the principles. So he seems to be saying that the sacred planets afford permanent homes to the principles. Now, what are the principles? You know, we have etheric, you know, we have the pranic principle, kamic principle. We have maybe Camomanus, where Venus might, it's a combined principle in a way, but sometimes it's considered a principle, and Venus is often associated with Camomanus, just as Sirius, in a larger cosmic sense, is. We have the monastic principle. We have the causal factor, which is sometimes listed as a principle. We have the factor of Manus, which relates to the higher mental body, the factor of Buddhi, which relates to the Buddhic body, and the factor of Atma, which relates to the higher atmic vehicle, or to the atmic vehicle. But our Solar Logos is not to the point where he has really organized his Buddhic vehicle. He's not even cosmic mentally polarized. So there are going to be higher principles of a Solar Logos which are not yet ready for expression. And the fact that Uranus and Neptune are so relatively unfolded, they are not really unfolded yet, the way Venus is very unfolded, may tell us something about the lack of coordination at this time of the higher vehicles of the Solar Logos. And maybe they really will be permanent atoms of a higher kind, around which are organized the truly higher vehicles of the Solar Logos. But what could we say about the cosmic atmic and cosmic Buddhic plane? We can't say anything, and because of the status of our Solar Logos, he does not really have access to those vehicles, because he is an initiate of the second degree, verging upon mental polarization, but probably maybe not having achieved it yet. He may not have the antikarana built in the cosmic sense, which would allow access to his higher vehicles. And so, hence, the lack of development of the planets which might correspond to those vehicles, namely Uranus and Neptune. Now Saturn, you know, there's a way in which I would like to see Saturn not just as a physical permanent atom. I'd like to see it as in relation to the triad, to the Solar Logoic triad. And I think the word reflection may be one of the words which reveals, or at least could throw light upon the mystery. Uranus and Neptune are reflections of the logoic, astral, and mental permanent atoms. What would these planets be in their astral and mental nature? Is it still the same entity, the Uranian entity and Neptunian entity? And is he talking about, well, too many thoughts come at once. Is he talking about their appearance on the dense physical plane, and because they appear on the dense physical plane, they are really reflections of something higher, because their original focus is really as a higher permanent atom? Saturn is in fact the correspondence of the logoic physical permanent atom. But I would like to see, as the triad corresponds to the personality, I would like to see that Saturn associated with one of the triadal permanent atoms of the solar logos. Anyway, sometimes planets have correspondences to permanent atoms, but sometimes they have correspondences to chakras, and we have to and sometimes to both, and we have to sort out those two different streams of correspondences. For instance, it might be possible within the solar logos to see, for instance, Venus correspond to the monastic permanent atom, because at the present time, the three super principles have their home in Saturn, Jupiter, and Venus. And the three super principles, in a way, are Atma, Buddhi, and Manas. So Venus has the correspondence then to the monastic permanent atom. Then does the Earth, in some strange way, have a correspondence to the mental unit of the solar logos? See, the correspondences in permanent atoms and units is different from the correspondences as chakras. So, you know, we're touching on the fringes of what to the human intellect is really mysterious. But Jupiter, you know, temporarily is the home of the Buddhic principle of our solar logos, and I suppose Saturn temporarily now, at this time, the home of the first aspect or Atmic principle of our solar logos. So it seems that some of these planets can do double duty and can be can represent themselves in different levels of the solar logos. We've been talking about this when we've described the chakras that they can be connected to. I don't want to torture the subject. Of course, part of me really does. I'd like to just sit here with it until it presents some very convincing realization. But that's not going to be my privilege at this particular time, and probably not in this particular life. See, the non-sacred planets, we really do have to find a place for Vulcan. It is a sacred planet and is the home of a logoic principle. Will it relate to the physical permanent atom? Will it in some way relate to Atma? Because spiritual will is involved, logoic spiritual will. We have to find a place for Venus. We won't worry about Mars and the Earth. They are non-sacred, although the mental unit might be involved here. We have to find a place for Jupiter, and as I say, it's the home of one of the three super principles. Let's look at the word. Is there such a word here as super principles? Three super principles. Venus, Jupiter, and Saturn might be considered at the vehicle of the three super principles at this time. Mercury, the Earth, and Mars are closely allied to to these three, but a hidden mystery lies here. And I've dealt with this, but I'd have to restudy it. Two of them are non-sacred planets, as we see, and we could probably correlate the three below with the three above, and there are different modes of correlation. Yes, I got into that before. So maybe just go through my Cosmic Fire commentaries, which are written out with fairly great care, and see what is said there. Okay. Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Vulcan are still developing the mind principle. Well, we talked about that somewhat in terms of Vulcan and the Earth. When we look at the stages of the of these planets, and we can do that, I think, maybe at the very end of the book here. Let's see. We'll do it like this. Here's the schools, and here are the I found the progressions of the chain. Earth is 4-4, Jupiter is third chain 4, not very developed, Saturn third chain 4, or let's just say not very unfolded, Mars fourth chain 4, same as the Earth, Vulcan third chain 4, and it's only Venus and Mercury where the number 5 appears, and where it can be said that the completeness of mental development is more likely to have appeared, because number 5 is directly connected with the complete development of manas. So basically what I'm going to do is copy this from page 373, and I'll make it a little bit of a smaller smaller tabulation, and then we'll see it. So the most highly unfolded of the planets are, in fact, Venus and Mercury. And Venus, the most unfolded. It's in its fifth chain and fifth globe, and it doesn't tell us what round. But remember, what I've been trying to say is that there are chain rounds and there are scheme rounds. So I believe what we have here, we may be looking at scheme rounds, although they are not listed. In other words, what we would have is Venus in its fifth scheme round. Mercury may also be in its fifth scheme round because it is preparing for obscuration as well, but is focused a little not quite as advanced as Venus. It hasn't moved to its fifth chain and fifth globe. It's in the fourth chain and fifth globe. All the rest are less unfolded. We don't know what rounds some of these other planets are in. We know Earth is in its fourth round. Maybe we can assume that Mars is also in its fourth round. Is there a correspondence here between the chain in which they are focused and the round which they are presently in? Well, when we speak of a planet as a whole, I think we have to think of the larger round, which is the scheme round. When we are discussing a planet as a whole and not a planetary chain, or is this PC? Planetary chain, yeah. Then we are probably dealing with scheme rounds. If we discuss the planetary chain, then we'd probably be dealing with chain rounds. In any case, these four And also, these five are developing, still developing Manas. These five Manas. And the others obviously have, and we know that Venus is working on Buddhic development, and we know also that Mercury is the planet deeply associated with Buddhi in the human being. So there may be a higher correspondence there which tells us that there is Buddhic development unfolding on the planet Mercury. Both Venus and Mercury are close to obscuration. So we have to look at that and mention it. Venus and Mercury both close to obscuration, with Venus closer. And on some of these other planets, the obscuration process, which is a very slow withdrawal and absorption, has already begun as well. I did discuss this other factor about Vulcan 2/5. And here it is. This is the entire paragraph from 403, and I think it should have been included in order to get a better view. So this is TCF 403. And I'd like to, you know, kind of do this. Well, no, maybe that's not the best idea. That's not the best idea. Okay. Good. Right. Okay. So again, it must be noted that Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and Vulcan are as yet developing Manas, and the stage achieved in each varies and is not for exoteric publication. The heavenly men of these schemes have not yet succeeded in bringing their bodies to the stage where transmutation on a large scale is possible. In other words, elevation, I suppose, into their soul nature. They are approaching it, and when the necessary 3/5 are reached, and this is in a way reminiscent, there's a parallel there with the fifth initiation, I mean third initiation, a parallel with the third initiation, then they will begin to transmute on a larger scale. The Earth scheme has about 1/5 in process of transmutation in one or other of the globes at this time, and Vulcan has very nearly 2/5. So I think we're talking about the transmutation of fire by friction into solar fire. But this is the paragraph from which the sentence which we began considering originates. And without this paragraph, we cannot really get the idea of what should be, how to approach this. Let's just say transmutation and the development, full development of Manas are allied. Transmutation and the full development of Manas are closely related. Okay. Because we're talking about having built that monastic structure we call the causal body, and having built it fully so we can graduate into the triad. I think that's what we mean by achievement here. Because in a way, think about it, the initiation process signals the flowering of the causal body on the higher mental plane. And the one who is ready to destroy the mental, to destroy the causal body has transmuted Manas. when Manas is entirely transmuted into higher Manas, then the causal body is ripe for destruction, and there is a change of planar focus. Well, I'm getting some sense of what it's like to work in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire doing verbal commentaries. I'm glad I have in back of me, having done the written work on this, never enough and never deep enough, of course, but at least ideas can be suggested. Now, basically, another way of looking at transmutation is, let's say, another way of looking at transmutation is to consider that the vehicles will all have atomic etheric matter as their major composition by the time the fourth initiation is reached. So we will have atomic etheric substance and very refined physical substance, atomic astral substance in the astral body, and then we will be, and then the lower mind will also have been elevated, and there will be, I suppose, some infusion or connection with, infusion of or connection with atomic mental substance. Then there will be a readiness for the destruction of the causal body, and this will be considered the achievement that we are talking about here, and we will fully enter the realm of solar fire, which from the perspective of Agni is found on most of the cosmic ethers, not just on the logoic, not on the logoic subplane, but on the others. So we're in the triad, we are also entering the realm of solar fire. It's the fiery world. It reflects electric fire, but it's still, from the Agni perspective, the domain of solar fire. Okay. Well, these are difficult matters. And I begin to think, you know, that only the person who's interested in cosmic fire and the relation of astrology to cosmology will be interested in exploring this particular area of the commentaries and these particular references in the appendix. Because some of the astrological, astrologically related parts of cosmic fire, I think, are among the, some of the most difficult. I think so. All right. I always leave unsatisfied, you know? But let's just say that some of these other planets, like, you know, Jupiter, Saturn, and Vulcan, they're only in their third chain, and you wonder, are they involved only in their third scheme round? Since they do represent the higher centers naturally unfold later than the lower centers, so there, the degree of development of those chakras would be slower, and hence the number of scheme rounds that they would have experienced would be less than that which is already unfolded. As I've said, it makes sense to me for Venus to represent the solar plexus chakra of the solar logos. And Venus is almost entirely unfolded. That unfoldment tells us that the solar plexus of our astrobuddhic solar system is very, very great. We have a solar logos with an astral polarization. It's an astrobuddhic system, and, well, I just thought, you know, there is one way that we might. Venus and Orion are very connected. In other words, the great light of Orion within our local area of stars may correspond to the great light of Venus in our local system. And it looks like they are both equally unfolded. So it strikes me, you know, there's this argument, does Orion really represent the solar plexus or does it represent the heart? Well, if there was the fully unfolded heart center, we can't say anything about the one about whom not we say we don't know, but if Venus represented the heart center of our solar logos, then its connection with Bodhi would be farther developed than it is, since it's not even an initiate of the third degree cosmically. It cannot have that full development with Bodhi. So I think it's for later that Venus will represent the heart center of our solar logos. I think that's coming. What about Orion? Orion is going to be either the solar plexus, as some have theorized, or it's going to be the heart because of the Betelgeuse blind, with Betelgeuse representing a heart and standing for the entire constellation. Well, we have to leave some things for another life, don't we? don't we have to do that? All right. I spent quite a bit of time on that one, I realize. It took a long time, you know, to work out, this is a very long paragraph, and so it makes me wonder, should we, we will begin it. Okay. Those who are working in the Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn scheme work somewhat differently to those functioning in the Venus, the Vulcan, the Mars, the Mercury-Jupiter scheme, the Earth, and the exoteric Saturn scheme, because there is an esoteric Saturn scheme. Let's see if I put this Saturn scheme. And so do the Manasa Devas, the solar angels of the inner round. So I guess what we can learn here is there are solar angels in many different parts of our solar system and in relation to other planetary logoi. Well, these, of course, are the three synthesizing planets. And when he talks about the Saturn scheme, I suppose he means the esoteric Saturn scheme. The exoteric Saturn scheme is simply has a type of functioning going on within it that is similar to that of lesser planetary logoi, the type of activity within lesser planetary logoi. Now, let's turn here to 777 of Cosmic Fire. No, that won't. Well, maybe it'll work. No, it won't. So we'll do it this way. 777. All right. And what is he talking about particularly? Oh, uh-huh. Okay, we have to go to another one, don't we? We'll do it this way. 777, there are seven references. And we want to get to page 777. Okay. Okay, there we are. yes, we're talking about solar petries. That's what we're talking about. And you see, when we just isolate the paragraph without knowing what we're talking about, the three activities are the main work of the solar petries. When the group and not the individual is concerned, their work lies along the line of adjusting egoic units in their groups and of making them group conscious. The middle group who form the nine petals are always the most active. They work in connection with the lower group who are the direct transmitters to the atomic triangle, etc. More of their work is not possible to detail, for the work of the Agnishvatas is vast and intricate and differs also in the various schemes and in certain particulars. So, excuse me, we would not know what those refers to if we did not go back and read. So it's those Agnishvatas who are working in the Uranus, Neptune and Saturn schemes. Well, going on a little further with such voice as I have at the moment, so they work differently from the Agnishvatas in these more exoteric schemes. And then we have, of course, the question of the esoteric Saturn and the exoteric Saturn. Some people have thought that the esoteric Saturn should be called the planet Sigma. I'm not sure whether this is strictly speaking the case. In a way, when I look at there it is. Perhaps this entire greater scheme, consisting of a number of lesser planetary schemes, is in a way the synthesizing esoteric Saturn scheme. This is one way to look at it, with exoteric Saturn being at the very center of it. But there is an entirety here which is esoteric in nature and might not be suspected. We have to do more research. Can a planet like Saturn ever be considered to be entirely exoteric, since it has such, well, it is related to the to Brahma and to the five lower planes and to the five, I suppose, lower principles. So from that point of view, it could be considered exoteric. But it has done such great things in connection with our solar system, and is a very old deity as well. So it could be that the undiscovered planet Sigma, which many excellent astrologers credit as existing, can be considered as the exoteric Saturn, but maybe not. As the esoteric Saturn, but maybe not. Esoteric Saturn. This would leave the planet Saturn in quite an unfavorable position, and Saturn is, after all, a sacred planet. So I think we may be talking about an internal structure here, with the entire grouping of these seven being the esoteric Saturn scheme. At least that is something that I would propose for consideration. It may not be correct, but I would propose it at least. We should note here again, and the Manasseh Devas and Solar Angels of the Inner Round. Okay. So the Manasseh Devas and Solar Angels of the Inner Round all also function differently than the Manasseh Devas or Solar Angels of these other schemes, Venus, Vulcan, Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, and the Earth. We should note here that we have again, or we again have a triplicity of groups, because the inner ground group is included. Representing a triplicity of forces, and herein lies a hint. Aha. Well, the you wonder about the status of the Manasseh Devas that are working in the inner round, because basically we have synthesizing. Inner round. Well, when we talk about the inner round, we may be talking about when speaking of the inner round, we may be talking about the three that hover above the seven, and then still more above the lower five. In other words, above the seven are always the, there are always the three. And we wonder whether there are some hidden planets. For instance, when we have chains, we may have three subtler chains that are inner. When we have planets, we may have three subtler groupings which are to be considered inner. The correspondences in the Kabbalah to the Keter, Chochmah, and Bina. So there is a hint here. And, of course, Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, in a way, represent synthesizing schemes. So can we say that invisible schemes or aggregations, which are maybe the three persons of the Trinity in this case, are still more subtle than the synthesizing planets? Maybe we can say that. There seems to be here four categories, really. Really, there may be four categories. Let's start from the outermost, the non-sacred planets, the sacred planets, the synthesizing planets, and the inner round aggregations, which take the place of the three above the seven. Although, interestingly enough, in this listing, non-sacred and sacred planets are all included together, but not synthesizing. So we have a threefoldness here, really, of the normal sacreds and non-sacreds, the synthesizing planets, and maybe a still higher group. In the others, let's see, we should here note that we have a triplicity representing a triplicity of forces, and herein lies a hint. In the others, the higher group, the middle group, holds sway, as these planets are the most occult and sacred in manifestation and are concerned with egos who are on the path and who are therefore group active. So the others are the non-sacred groups, I suppose. The higher and the middle group hold sway. In connection with Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, this might be expected as they are the synthesizing planetary schemes and provide conditions suitable only for very advanced stages. They are called the reaping planets. Well, I'm not exactly sure. This has been so divided up. We should note here that we have a triplicity of groups representing a triplicity of forces, and herein lies a hint. In the others, and which others is he referring to, the higher group and the middle group hold sway, as they are the most occult and sacred in manifestation, and are concerned with egos who are on the path and who are therefore group active. In connection with Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, this might be expected. So is he including Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn in the others? Or is he differentiating them from all that he has listed? Well, there's a higher group and a middle group, and then there's the inner round group. Well, what choice do I have at this point but to throw up my hands and say, I think not. We're not going to solve this. I'm not going to solve it at the moment. This is the end of Esoteric Astrology 152b, and we really haven't made a whole lot of progress. I think we're on page 1645, and we'll begin with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 153a on page 645. Well, being of the somewhat stubborn type, I think, you see, the trouble with these references at the end of the book is that they are out of context. We are talking about different types of solar angels who are working in different types of planets. So we say here that in the others, the higher group of Agnishvatas and the middle group of Agnishvatas hold sway, as these planets are the most occult and sacred in manifestation and are concerned with egos who are on the path and who are therefore group active. So And it looks like Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, and Saturn are included in this group of others, for they are the synthesizing schemes. We don't know whether they are included, but let's put it like this, that when it comes to the Mars and the Earth scheme, and maybe what is called here, who knows, the exoteric Saturn scheme, then the highest two groups of monastic devas do not hold sway. So in the Mars and Earth schemes, and maybe for exoteric Saturn, whatever that is, the higher groups of Agnishvatas do not hold sway. But in the sacred planets, and especially in the synthesizing planets, they do. And this has been a section on the development of the solar angels, so, of course, the fuller text has to be brought into relation with this excise text in order to understand what the groupings really are. In any case, solar angels are working on all of the planets, and they are working in different areas. Now, we find that the highest group of Agnishvatas is in order. It comes later, and their work lies along the lines of adjusting the egoic units in the group and of making them group conscious. The middle group forms the nine petals, and they are always the most active. They don't form the three synthesizing petals. This middle group works in connection with the lower group, who are the direct transmitters of energy to the atomic triangle. So we have three groups of Manasadevas or solar angels, and it seems that the lowest group would be most active in those planets where the personality is still the predominant center, and Mars and Earth would have to be included, and maybe Pluto as well. We don't know. At the time this was written, Pluto had not been discovered, and so was not mentioned. So we have different categories of planets, and we have to wonder about what's involved in the inner round. We have different categories of planets and different work of the Manasadevas within those different categories of planets. Well, there I feel a little better about that. It seemed to be at first an insoluble problem because we did not have the references to which the excised portion referred. All right, well, now I will end this. I'm running a little bit over, and I'll just say that this, in fact, is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 152B, and we'll begin with 153. Okay, see you then.